Chapter 4. The important thing about adventures, thought Mr. Bunsey, was that they should not be so long as to make you miss mealtimes. From Mr. Bunsey Has an Adventure. The kid and the girl and Morris were in a large kitchen. The kid could tell it was a kitchen because of the huge black iron range in the chimney breast and the pans hanging on the walls and the long scarred table. What it didn't seem to have was what a kitchen traditionally had, which was food. The girl went to a metal box in the corner and fumbled around her neck for a string, which, it turned out, held a big key. "You can't trust anybody," she said. "And the rats steal 100 times what they eat, the devils."
"I don't think they do," said the kid. 10 times at most."
"You know all about rats all of a sudden?" said the girl, unlocking the metal case.
"Not all of a sudden. I learnt it when... Ow! That really hurt!"
"Sorry about that," said Morris. "I accidentally scratched you, did I?" He tried to make a face which said, "Don't be a complete twerp, okay?" which is quite hard to do with a cat head. Melissa gave him a suspicious look and then turned back to the metal box.
"There's some milk that's not gone hard yet, and a couple of fish heads," she said, peering inside.
"Sounds good to me," said Morris.
"What about your human?"
"Him? He'll eat any old scraps."
"There's bread and sausage," said the girl, taking a can from the metal cupboard. "We're all very suspicious about the sausages. There's a tiny bit of cheese, too, but it's rather ancestral."
"I don't think we should eat your food if it's so short," said the kid. "We have got money.
Oh, my father says it'd reflect very badly on the town if we weren't hospitable. He's the mayor, you know."
"He's the government," said the kid.
The girl stared at him.
"I suppose so," she said. "Funny way of putting it. The town council makes the laws, really. He just runs the place and argues with everyone, and he says we shouldn't have any more rations than any other people, to show solidarity in these difficult times. It was bad enough that tourists stopped visiting our hot baths, but the rats have made it a lot worse."
Melissa took a couple of saucers from the big kitchen dresser.
"My father says if we're all sensible there will be enough to go round," she went on, "which I think is very commendable. I entirely agree. But I think that once you've shown solidarity, you should be allowed just a little extra. In fact, I think we get a bit less than everyone else. Can you imagine? Anyway."
"So you really are a magical cat, then," she finished,
pouring the milk into a saucer. It oozed rather than gushed, but Morris was a street cat and could drink milk so rotten it would try to crawl away.
"Oh, yes, that's right, magical," he said, with a yellow-white ring around his mouth.
For 2 fish heads, he'd be anything for anyone.
"Probably belong to a witch, I expect, if it's a name like Griselda or one of those names," said the girl, putting the fish heads on another saucer.
"Yeah, right, Griselda, right," said Morris, not raising his head.
"Who lived in a gingerbread cottage in the forest, probably."
"Yeah, right," said Morris.
And then, because he wouldn't be Morris if he couldn't be a bit inventive, he added, "Only it was a crispbread's cottage, 'cause she was slimming. Very healthy witch, Griselda."
The girl looked puzzled for a moment.
"That's not how it should go," she said.
"Sorry, I tell a lie. It was gingerbread, really," said Morris quickly.
"Someone giving you food was always correct.
And she had big warts, I'm sure."
"Miss," said Morris, trying to look sincere, "some of those warts had so much personality they used to have friends of their own.
What's your name, miss?"
"Promise not to laugh."
"All right.
After all, there might be more fish heads."
"It's... Melissa."
"Oh."
"Are you laughing?"
she said in a threatening voice.
"No," said Morris, mystified. "Why should I?"
"You don't think it's a funny name?"
Morris thought about the names he knew. Ham and Pork, Dangerous Beans, Dark Tan, Sardines.
"Sounds like an ordinary kind of name to me," he said.
Melissa gave him another suspicious look, but turned her attention to the kid, who was sitting with the usual happy, faraway smile he wore when he didn't have anything else to do.
"And have you got a name?" she said. "You're not the third and youngest son of a king, are you? If your name starts Prince, that's a definite clue."
The kid said,
"I think it's Keith."
"You never said you had a name," said Morris.
"No one ever asked before," said the kid. "Keith is not a promising name start," said Melissa. "It doesn't hint of mystery. It just hints of Keith. Are you sure it's your real name?"
"It's just the one they gave me." "Ah, that's more like it. A slight hint of mystery," said Melissa, suddenly looking interested. "Just enough to build up suspense. You've stolen a veiled berth, I expect. You probably are the rightful king of some country, but they found someone who looked like you and did a swap. In that case, you'll have a magic sword, only it won't look magic, you see, until it's time for you to manifest your destiny. You've probably found on a doorstep."
"I was, yes," said Keith.
"See, I'm always right."
Morris was always on the lookout for what people wanted, and what Melissa wanted, he felt, was a gag. But he'd never heard the stupid-looking kid talk about himself before.
"What were you doing on a doorstep?" he said.
"I don't know. Gurgling, I expect," said Keith.
"You never said," said Morris accusingly.
"Is it important?"
"There was a magic sword or a crown in the basket with you, probably, and you've got a mysterious tattoo or a strange-shaped birthmark, too," said Melissa.
"I don't think so."
"No one ever mentioned them," said Keith.
"There was just me and a blanket and a note."
"A note? But that's important."
"It said 19 pints and a strawberry yoghurt," said Keith.
"Ah, not helpful then," said Melissa.
"Why 19 pints of milk?"
"It was the Guild of Musicians," said Keith. "Quite a large place. I don't know about the strawberry yoghurt."
"Abandoned orphan is good," said Melissa.
"After all, a prince can only grow up to be a king, but a mysterious orphan could be anybody. Were you beaten and starved and locked in the cellar?"
"I don't think so," said Keith, giving her a funny look.
"Everyone at the guild was very kind. They were mostly nice people. They taught me a lot."
"We've got guilds here," said Melissa.
"They teach boys to be carpenters and stonemasons and things like that."
"The guild taught me music," said Keith. "I'm a musician. I'm good at it too. I've been earning my own living since I was 6.
"Aha! Mysterious orphan, strange talent, distressed upbringing, it's all shaping up," said Melissa.
"The strawberry yoghurt is probably not important.
Would your life have been different if it had been banana-flavoured? Who can say? What kind of music do you play?"
"Kinds? There aren't any kinds, there's just music," said Keith.
"There's always music if you listen."
Melissa looked at Morris.
"Is he always like this?" she demanded.
"This is the most I've ever heard him say," said the cat.
"I expect you're very keen to know all about me," said Melissa. "I expect you're just too polite to ask."
"Gosh, yes," said Morris.
"Well, you probably won't be surprised to know that I've got 2 dreadful stepsisters, said Melissa, "and I have to do all the chores."
"Gosh, really?" said Morris,
wondering if there were any more fish heads, and if there were any more fish heads, whether they were worth all this.
"Well, most of the chores," said Melissa, as if revealing an unfortunate fact. "Some of them, definitely. I have to clean up my own room, you know, and it's extremely untidy."
"Gosh, really?"
"And it's very nearly the smallest bedroom. There's practically no cupboards, and I'm running out of bookshelf space."
"Gosh, really?"
"And people are incredibly cruel to me. You will note that we are here in a kitchen, and I'm the mayor's daughter. Should the daughter of a mayor be expected to wash up at least once a week? I think not."
"Gosh, really?"
"And will you just look at these torn and bedraggled clothes I have to wear?"
Morris looked. He wasn't good on clothes. Fur was enough for him. As far as he could tell, Melissa's dress was pretty much like any other dress. It seemed to be all there. There weren't any holes except where the arms and head poked through.
"Here, just here," said Melissa,
pointing to a place on the hem which to Morris looked no different than the rest of the dress.
"I had to sew that back myself, you know."
"Gosh, Rip!"
Morris stopped. Sardines was abseiling down from a crack in the ancient ceiling. He had a knapsack on his back.
"And on top of this, I'm the one that has to queue for the bread and sausages every day,"
Melissa continued, but Morris was listening even less than he had been before. It had to be sardines, he thought. Idiot. He always goes ahead of the trap squad. Of all the kitchens in all the town he could turn up in, he's turned up in this one. Any minute she's going to turn around and scream. Sardines would probably treat it as applause, too. He lived life as if it was a performance. Other rats just ran around squeaking and messing up things, and that was quite good enough to convince humans there was a plague, but oh no! Sardines always had to go further. Sardines and his yarrow song and dance act.
"And the rats take everything," Melissa was saying. "What they don't take, they spoil. It's been terrible. We have to buy corn and stuff from the traders that sail up the river. That's why bread is so expensive."
"Expensive, eh?" said Morris.
"We've tried traps and dogs and cats and poison, and still the rats keep coming," said the girl. "They've learned to be really sneaky, too. They hardly ever end up in our traps anymore."
"What's the good of the rat-catchers offering us 50p a tail if the rats are so cunning? The rat-catchers have to use all kind of tricks to get them, they say."
Behind her, Sardines looked carefully around the room and then signalled to the rats in the ceiling to pull the rope up.
"Don't you think this would be a good time to go away?" said Morris.
"Why are you making faces like that?" said Melissa, staring at him.
"Oh, well, you know that kind of cat that grins all the time? Heard of that? Well, I'm the kind that makes, you know, weird faces," said Morris desperately. "And sometimes I just burst out and say things, 'Get away, get away! See, I did it again. It is an affliction. I probably need counselling. Oh, no, don't do that. This is not the time to do that. Whoops, there I go again."
Sardines had pulled his straw hat out of his knapsack and was holding a small walking stick. It was a good routine, even Morris had to admit. Some towns had advertised for a rat piper the very first time he'd done it. People could tolerate rats in the cream and rats in the roof and rats in the teapot, but they drew the line at tap dancing. If you saw tap dancing rats, you were in big trouble. Morris had reckoned that if only the rats could play an accordion as well, they could do two towns a day. He'd stared for too long. Melissa turned and her mouth opened in shock and horror as Sardines went into his routine. The cat saw her hand reach out for a pan that was on the table. She threw it very accurately. But Sardines was a good pot dodger. The rats were used to having things thrown at them. He was already running when the pan was halfway across the room, and then he leapt onto the chair, and then he jumped onto the floor, and then he dodged behind the dresser, and then there was a sharp, final, metallic snap.
"Ha!"
said Melissa, and Morris and Keith stared at the dresser.
"That's one rat less at any rate. I really hate them."
"It was Sardines," said Keith.
"No, it was definitely a rat," said Melissa. "Sardines hardly ever invade a kitchen. I expect you're thinking about the plague of lobsters over in—"
"He just called himself Sardines because he saw the name on a rusty old tin and thought it sounded stylish," said Morris.
He wondered if he dare look behind the dresser.
"He was a good rat," said Keith. "He used to steal books for me when they were teaching me to read."
"Excuse me, are you mad?" said Melissa. "It was a rat. The only good rat is a dead rat."
"Hello?"
said a little voice. It came from behind the dresser.
"It can't be alive. It's a huge trap," said Melissa. "It's got teeth."
"Anyone there? Only the stick is bending,"
said the voice. The dresser was massive, the wood so old that time had turned it black and as solid and heavy as stone.
"That's not a rat talking, is it?" said Melissa. "Please tell me rats can't talk."
"In fact, it's bending quite a bit now,"
said the voice, which was slightly muffled. Morris squinted into the space behind the dresser.
"I can see him," he said. He wedged the stick and the jaws as they closed. "Watch us, Sardines. How you doing?"
"Fine, boss," said Sardines in the gloom. "If it wasn't for this trap, I'd say everything was perfect. Did I mention the stick is bending?"
Yes, you did."
"It's bent some more since then, boss."
Keith grabbed one end of the dresser and grunted as he tried to move it.
"It's like rock," he said.
"It's full of crockery," said Melissa, now quite bewildered. "But rats don't really talk, do they?"
"Get out of the way!"
shouted Keith. He grabbed the back edge of the dresser with both hands and braced one foot against the wall and heaved. Slowly, like a mighty forest tree, the dresser pitched forward. The crockery started to fall out as it tipped, plate slipping off plate in one glorious, chaotic deal from a very expensive pack of cards. Even so, some of them survived the fall onto the floor, and so did some of the cups and saucers as the cupboard opened and added to the fun. But that didn't make any difference, because then the huge, heavy woodwork thundered down on top of them. One miraculously whole plate rolled past Keith, spinning round and round and getting close to the floor with the groing sound circumstances. Keith reached down to the trap, grabbing Sardines. As he pulled the rat up, the stick gave way and the trap snapped shut. A bit of the stick spun away through the air.
"Are you all right?" said Keith.
"Well, boss, all I can say is it's a good job rats don't wear underwear. Thanks, boss," said Sardines.
He was quite plump for a rat, but when his feet were dancing he could float across the floor like a balloon. There was the sound of a tapping foot.
Melissa, with arms folded and an expression like a thunderstorm, looked at Sardines and then at Morris, and then at the stupid-looking Keith, and then at the wreckage on the floor.
Sorry about the mess," said Keith, "but he was..."
She waved this away.
"Okay," she said, as if she'd been thinking deeply. "It goes like this, I think. The rat is a magical rat. I bet he's not only one. Something happened to him or them, and now they're really quite intelligent despite the tap dancing. And they're friends with the cat. So, why would rats and a cat be friends? And it goes, there's some kind of an arrangement, right? I know, don't tell me, don't tell me."
"Huh?"
said Keith.
"I shouldn't think anyone ever has to tell you anything," said Morris.
"It's something to do with plagues of rats, right? All those towns we've heard about. Well, you heard about them too, and so you got together with Thingy here."
"Keith," said Keith.
"Yes, and so you go from town to town pretending to be a plague of rats, and Thingy..."
"Keith."
"Yes, pretends to be a rat piper, and you all follow him out, right? It's all a big schwindle, yes?"
Sardines looked up at Morris.
"She's got us banged to rights, boss," he said. "So now you've got to give me a good reason why I don't call the watch out on you," said Melissa triumphantly.
"I don't have to," Morris thought, "because you won't. Gosh, humans are so easy." He rubbed up against Melissa's legs and gave her a smirk.
"If you do, you'll never find out how the story ends," he said.
"Ha! It'll end with you going to prison," said Melissa.
But Morris saw her staring at the stupid-looking Keith and at Sardines. Sardines still had his little straw hat on. When it comes to attracting attention, that sort of thing accounts for a lot. When he saw her frowning at him, Sardines hastily removed his straw hat and held it in front of him by the brim.
"There's something I'd like to find out, boss," he said, "if we are finding out things."
Melissa raised an eyebrow.
"Well," she said, "and don't call me boss." "I'd like to find out why there's no rats in this city, Gov," said Sardines.
Sardines grinned nervously as Melissa gave him another long stare.
"Would you like some cheese?" she said. "I'm afraid it's only mousetrap." "I don't think so, thank you very much all the same," said Sardines very carefully and politely.
"It's no use. I think it really is time to tell the truth," said Keith.
"No, no, 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 no," said Morris. "It's all because..."
"You were right, miss," said Keith wearily. "We go from town to town with a bunch of rats and fool people into giving us money to leave. That's what we do. I'm sorry we've been doing it. This was going to be the last time. I'm very sorry. You shared your food with us, and you haven't got much, too. We ought to be ashamed."
It seemed to Morris, while he was watching Melissa make up her mind, that her mind worked in a different way to other people's minds. She understood all the hard things without even thinking. Magical rats? Yeah, yeah. Talking cats? Been there, done that, bought the singlet. It was the simple things that were hard. Her lips were moving. She was, Morris realised, making a story out of it.
"So," she said, "you come along with your trained rats?"
"We prefer educated rodents, Gov," said Sardines.
"All right, your educated rodents, and you move into a city, and what happens to the rats that are there already?"
Sardines looked helplessly at Morris. Morris nodded at him to keep on. They were all going to be in big trouble if Melissa didn't make up a story she liked.
"They keep out of our way, boss. I mean, Gov,"
said Sardines.
"Can they talk too?"
"No, Gov." "I think our rats think of them a bit like monkeys," said Keith.
"I was talking to Sardines," said Melissa.
"Sorry,"
said Keith.
"And there's no other rats here at all?"
Melissa went on.
"No, Gov. A few old skeletons, and some piles of poisons, and lots of traps, boss, but no rats, boss."
"But the rat catchers nail up a lot of rat tails every day."
"Speak as I find, boss, Gov. No rats, boss, Gov. No other rats anywhere we've been, boss, Gov."
"Have you ever looked at the rat tails, miss?" said Morris.
"What do you mean?" said Melissa.
"They're fake," said Morris. "Some of them, anyway. They're just old leather bootlaces. I saw some in the street."
"They weren't real rat tails," said Keith.
"I'm a cat. You think I don't know what rat tails look like?"
"Surely people would notice," said Melissa.
"Yeah," said Morris. "Do you know what an aglet is?"
"Aglet? Aglet? What's an aglet got to do with anything?" snapped Melissa.
"It's those little metal bits on the end of shoelaces," said Morris.
"How come a cat knows a word like that?" said the girl.
"Everyone's got to know something," said Morris. "Have you ever looked closely at the rat tails?"
"Of course not. You can get the plague from rats," said Melissa.
"That's right. Your legs explode," said Morris, grinning. "That's why you didn't see the aglets. Your legs exploded lately, Sardines?"
"Not today, boss," said Sardines. "Mind you, it's not even lunchtime yet."
Melissa Grimm looked, well, grim.
"Aha," she said, and it seemed to Morris that the "ha" had a very nasty edge to it. "So you're not going to tell the watch about us?" he ventured, hopefully.
"What? That I've been talking to a rat and a cat?" said Melissa. "Of course not. They'll tell my father I've been telling stories, and I'll get locked out of my room again."
"You get locked out of your room as a punishment?" said Morris.
"Yes, it means I can't get at my books. I'm a rather special person, as you may have guessed," said Melissa proudly. "Haven't you heard of the sisters Grimm, Agonista and Evisera Grimm? They were my grandmother and my great-aunt. They wrote fairy tales."
"Ah, so we're temporarily out of trouble here," thought Morris. "Best to keep her talking."
"I'm not a big reader, as cats go," he said. "So what were these, then? Stories about little people with wings going tinkle-tinkle?"
"No," said Melissa. "They were not big on tinkling little people. They wrote real fairy tales, ones with lots of blood and bones and bats and rats in. I've inherited the story-telling talent," she added.
"I kind of thought you had," said Morris.
"And if there's no rats under the town but the rat catchers are nailing up bootlaces, I smell a rat," said Melissa.
"Sorry," said Sardines. "I think that was me. I'm a bit nervous."
There were sounds from upstairs.
"Quick, go out across the backyard," Melissa commanded. "Get up into the hayloft over the stables. I'll bring you some food. I know exactly how this sort of thing goes."